irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, 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 hello. It is another wonderful, beautiful Thursday evening here in good old downtown Sherman Oaks, California. We're sitting here on the 36th floor of the Sherman Oaks Tower overlooking Notre Dame High School and a traffic jam. No.
We must have different windows.
Well, we do. I have the good ones. Okay. You are listening to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio tonight with a lovely and charming Bobby Jean Bell.
Hello, Jim.
Hi, Bobby. I didn't use all the adjectives tonight, Jim. I tend to pile them up from time to time.
Save something for next week.
I know, huh? Tonight is our second year anniversary.
Oh, my gosh, it's tonight?
It is tonight.
Oh, how did I leave
it's
that?
It's 2 years
and
tonight.
And I left that anniversary card sitting on the coffee table next to all my writer's block
oh,
notes.
My God.
Well, yeah.
Congratulations
on 2 years.
2 years.
And 104 books. And,
yeah. No kidding.
Or close to.
One of which we will be discussing tonight.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, real quick, I just want to say that the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing. Black Dog in Simi Valley is there for new writers wanting to wend their way through the publishing process, writing, editing, proofreading. Formatting, whatever it is you need to do as a new writer, we're there to help you. And the number there is 805-795-3165. And by Out West, and they are your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include Scully Leather Company, Rock Mount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a lot. But I actually have to tell you, Bobby wrote this. It's a pretty good ad, actually. Shop online at www.scvoutwest.com or give them a call at 877-340-9378. That is toll free. And if you're interested in their concert series, which is going to the end of October?
October.
The direct line is 661-347-9700. And the fourth Friday. Of every month, they have great entertainment, Western oriented, and I'm sure you're going to love it. We've had some of the guests in here, and mm-hmm. they're fun. Okay, and then our major sponsor, of course, is Target Freight Management. And since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. They go to great lengths to secure the most competitive rates possible. TFM also provides unmatched customer support from their dedicated truckload division. In an effort to streamline their customers' overall shipping efficiency, TFM provides real-time updates on all lanes. Call TFM today at 844-653-7789. Tell them you heard it here on the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. And the person you want to talk to is Mike Matruski, nice guy. And if you're an LTL shipper, we know you're looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call today and you won't be disappointed. You know, when I was a kid, we had a neighbor that was a family friend. It was the Ingram family, and Robert's mother was from England. And she used to instruct us in the proper way of saying letters and words. And the English, she told me once that the English, that it is not W. It's pronounced in England, double U.
Double U.
Double U. Which I always thought interesting because I never heard her use it, double U. But it's double U, double U, double U, double U. Wow, what a mouthful. That's why they're in England and we ain't.
King's English, please.
I got a book signing coming up on June 17th,
yes.
10 to 12. We're going to try to stretch it 10 to 2. And it's going to be at the $5 or less bookstore on Cochrane Avenue in Simi Valley. It's in the plaza where the Best Buy is. Not the Best Buy, excuse me. Staples.
Mm-hmm.
Right across from Target. And feel free to please stop by. We're going to be talking about writing. We're going to be talking about publishing and editing and just having a good time. And we're going to be signing some books and hopefully selling some books. And we're going to have some writer friends that are going to be there. I believe Margaret Brownlee's going to stop by.
Oh, good.
Richard Polinelli's going to stop by. And he has a book signing coming up on the 30th of this month.
Of this month. Of May.
May. In Wood Ranch in Simi, and okay. It's going to be at the Wood Ranch. If I'm mistaken, Richard, nail me on it when you call in tonight. I believe it is at the Starbucks in Wood Ranch someplace. Richard, you can clean that up for me. His is 12 to 2, May 30th. So if you can get a chance to get out to Simi, go see them. And tonight... We got a lot going on tonight. Richard will be calling in a little bit later, actually. Our guest tonight is a gentleman named Elliot Parker, and he's the author of A Breakdown at Clear River and Fragile Brilliance. Fragile Brilliance was a 2016 finalist for the Lords of Discipline Thriller Prize, which is a part of the Pat Conroy Southern Book Prize. I know Pat Conroy. He wrote a lot of books.
Yeah, I'd like to actually ask, I'd like to know more about the Lords of Discipline Thriller Prize.
Yeah,
that'll
me
be
too.
A question. If Elliot's listening, that will be a question I'll be asking you.
If you're on, if you're still on the line, Elliot, it's one that we're going to be hitting you with. So don't go away. He has been awarded the Bronze Award by the National Literary Habitat. I don't know what that is either, mm-hmm. but we're going to ask that one too. Organization for Mystery and Thriller Writing. His short fiction has appeared in Spec Literary Journal, Apex Books, One Story Magazine, and others. He teaches writing and literature at Mount West Community and Technical College in Huntington, West Virginia, which I am absolutely certain is not too far from where he lives in Ohio. I'm sure it's like one of those run across the border, do your job, and get out. It's like, you know, Zorro's father. I told you once, I told you 1,000 times. Get in, cut your Z's, and get out. Okay, Elliot, if we haven't embarrassed you enough, we're going to start right now. Would you please welcome Mr. Elliot? What's his name?
Park. Oh, my goodness. Elliot, are you still with us?
Oh, he's not on yet. Okay, Elliot, if you haven't hung up by now and really pissed, would you please welcome to the writer's block, Mr. Elliot Parker. Elliot, you with us?
Hi, Jim. Thank you so much for having me.
We're giving you the clap, so hang tough. We're going to be able to
do it. Oh, Elliot, and we must just be having second anniversary jitters or chuckles or something going on. Welcome to the show.
Thank you all. Thank you all very much. Thanks so much for having me, and congratulations on your 2-year anniversary.
Well, thank you. As I told you last night, I mailed you a coffee mug. You'll probably be seeing it tomorrow in the mail.
Yeah. We love to thank our participants. So it's some nice way for you to remember us after tonight.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Every time you get pissed and pour wine in it, just make sure you have the logo facing you. Well, you made a comment last night about you love the way we banter and have fun with our guests.
Well, there we go.
There you are. Okay, you can now interview yourself. We're just going to sit here and shut off our mics. Oh, my gosh.
Welcome to the show, Elliot. Welcome. Tell us where you're calling in from again.
Chesapeake, Ohio.
Okay. And you also, you teach writing. I'm so interested. Many of our guests have won, their books have won awards or been nominated. And for many, many awards that I'm totally unfamiliar with. And I think, Jim, we should have a show that just talks about, like, awards and how do you submit a book.
I think that's an outstanding idea.
But tell us a little bit about the Lords of Discipline Thriller Prize. And congratulations for your nomination there.
Oh, thank you very much. I was honored to have my book submitted for that award. Pat Conroy is a writer who has greatly influenced me, and I can remember I was in high school when I first discovered some of the books that he had written. And, you know, there are two writers who really influenced me a great deal, both as a reader and a writer. One was John Steinbeck from a classical, more literary sense, and then Pat Conroy. And so to be nominated for an award that kind of bears his name and bears a name to the legacy, to his legacy and to the books that he's written, was amazing. The Lords of Discipline Thriller Prize is connected to an organization called the Southern Independent Booksellers Association, or SIBA, as the acronym. And Pat Conroy has been a huge part of that organization. Fortunately, he had passed away here recently, but he's been a huge part of that organization. And they take the different categories of genre of books and try to tie it to a specific book that he wrote that was similar in that genre. And the Lords of Discipline, one of his earlier works, was very much sort of a mystery kind of thriller type of a book. And so books nominated in that category for the Lords of Discipline Prize are typically thriller type stories. And I was nominated the finalist, the winner was announced in July. I think I found out in March or April of 2016 that I had been nominated. I was on a list with some writers like John Grisham. I was on a list with some writers like Greg Isles, who's just a wonderful writer, so is John Grisham. So just to be in that category or to have someone say, you know, your writing or your story or your work is the equivalent of those kind of writers was a tremendous honor. And to be involved with something that was connected to Pat Conroy, who's a writer who's influenced me so much, and is really one of the reasons I'm a writer today, was just a wonderful experience and a wonderful honor.
Well, again, congratulations. And I think talking about genres and the fact that this was the Thriller Prize, I, as a reader, and of course not as a writer, but as a reader, I always get a little confused about sort of lines of distinction between, you know, a detective story, a thriller, you know, what makes, mostly tonight we're going to be talking about your most current book, Fragile Brilliance, which is a detective story, but a thriller. Can you kind of tell us, you know, when you're sitting down to write, do you say, I'm going to write a thriller or I'm going to write a detective story because my main character is a sergeant? Like, how do you go about that?
Well, I think that, you know, there's so many different kind of genres of mystery story. You've got sort of the cozy mystery, the Agatha Christie kind of mystery, Murder on the Orient Express, those kinds of books, which kind of fit into that category. Then you have sort of the hard-boiled detective, which is Walter Mosley's kind of area, if in terms of a writer who writes a lot in that genre, with his E.Z. Rollins character, who kind of has this detective or this protagonist who's not really a cop, but he's not really a civilian, and he's got some law enforcement training, but he's not really a police officer, and he sort of has a somewhat adversarial relationship with the police, and he sort of works with them at times when it's advantageous for him. So you've got that kind of a genre of mystery fiction. Then you get into the thriller, which is what Fragile Brilliance is, and it's kind of a genre I like to read and kind of the genre I like to write. And I guess the easiest way to describe it, Bobby, would be it's the kind of story that, you know, really gets going right from the first page, and it doesn't really stop until the end.
True.
And the action and the you know, it keeps you turning the pages. It keeps you wanting to know what's going to happen. Depending on the type of thriller, you know, there's a lot of violence. There can be a lot of violence in that genre. There can be a high body count in that genre, depending on what the plot of the story is. It's really sort of a high octane experience for the reader, mm-hmm. Reading a thriller, and for a writer as well. So mm-hmm. it really kind of grabs you from the first page and really doesn't stop until the end.
Right.
And it's a genre that I always like to read as a writer, but as a reader, I love that kind of genre, and it's a lot of fun to write that as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say that several times, and as I read the book, I read it in like a day and a half, so I flew through it. And not only because I liked the book, but mostly because I really wanted to see what was going to happen at the end.
I wanted
to see if Ronan was going to live through this.
Yeah, I wanted to know what would happen to Ronan
in the hospital more than he wasn't.
He's sort of like Gumby. I mean, he just, or like in the, you know, nothing can get this guy down. you know. No,
yeah, I mean, broken legs, broken ribs, you know.
He just keeps on trucking. He just keeps on trucking, yeah.
I mean, what a great character.
Tell us about, we're both gushing now over one of the characters, Ronan. Tell us a little bit about Ty and Ronan, the two main characters in this book.
Yeah, sure. I love to, and thank you, Jim, for the compliment. I mean, I think that's the greatest compliment any writer, but especially a thriller writer, can get is when someone says, you know, I got into your book and just couldn't put it down, or I read it in a day and a half. I mean, that's just the nicest compliment. So thank you for that.
I did. It was Ronan, a good book. Go ahead.
So I'm sorry. I appreciate that. I appreciate that very much. But Ronan McAuliffe is a police sergeant in Charleston, West Virginia. And he works primarily undercover. He's from Boston originally. He relocates to West Virginia because he doesn't really like, you know, that he grows tired of sort of the big city life there in the city, and he wants to get somewhere where, there's it's more rural, there's more mountains, there's more, you know, a sort of a laid back lifestyle. He meets Ty, who is an ER nurse at Charleston Mercy Hospital, which is a level one trauma center. How he and Ty sort of meet is because anytime that there is an incident involving an investigation that Ronan is pursuing, and if something happens to that suspect or those suspects that he's looking at, they're taken to Charleston Mercy Hospital, and Ty is the charge nurse in the emergency room. So, you know, when Ronan's going in there looking for suspects, or he's following a suspect in there that's receiving treatment, that's how he sort of meets Ty, and that's how they cross paths, in the story, or sort of in their relationship. Ronan is gay, Ty is gay, and they meet over the course of these interactions, and Ronan. During one particular chapter in the book, there's Ronan reflecting back to the first time that he met Ty, and there was a situation where he was being treated after he and his partner Eric Bonamico had been on sort of an undercover sting. They were going in to make an arrest. There was a problem there with the arrest. Ronan gets injured, you know, not critically, but does have to go to Charleston Mercy to get treatment because it's the level one trauma center. He meets Ty, and he realizes then that Ty is also gay, and so he is attracted to Ty, you know, physically, but also gets to know him as a person, and he pursues that relationship with Ty. And so the book opens up with them getting ready to start their day. Both of them work nights. So Ronan works at night, Ty works at night. So they're getting ready to sort of start their day, and you know, Ronan gets dressed first, and he's out the door first. Ty comes behind him. As Ronan is on his way to work, he notices that there is a disturbance outside of a sports bar in downtown Charleston. Looks like a teenager or a college student named Michael Warner, or he is a teenager or college student. Michael Warner is being jumped or assaulted by three guys outside of this bar. So he stops the car, gets out, goes over to investigate, tells those three guys to knock it off. They don't. He tells them to knock it off again, and they don't. And instead of, you know, sort of backing away or, you know, stepping away, which is what most people would do in that situation if confronted by a police officer, they turn on Ronan and attack him. So not only does Michael Warner get attacked and hurt pretty severely, but then Ronan is attacked and hurt pretty severely. So that's really the first scene that kind of launches the story from there.
Right.
Ronan has an amazing ability to jump back and pop back up again after he's in the ER
a lot,
quite a bit. There's a lot of comings and goings there. You introduce a drug in this story that I was unfamiliar with, and I know Jim was sharing with me that he went and
I had to Google
online
it.
Investigating and said to me, "You don't want to look at any pictures. You give us enough graphic information on it that I didn't feel that I needed to go and necessarily look at any." But what a horrible, horrible drug! How did you learn about it? Because this is a real thing. How did this come to light for you?
There is a gentleman in Huntington who came and did a presentation for our students at Mount West about 3 or 4 years ago. And he came and the city of Huntington, where Mount West is located, had received a grant from the Department of Justice in Washington to for drug education in schools, to go into different schools, both, you know, middle school, high school, and also colleges, excuse me, and talk about drugs and what they can do. And he was able to bring in some slides of actual people who, you know, kind of, what does it look like, you know, what does it look like from someone who is on drugs? And he would show pictures of, you know, someone who, you know, before they use drugs and after they use drugs. And at the end of his presentation, he said, you know, there's another drug that we haven't seen pop up in our area, but it's called Croc, or desamorphine is its technical term. And basically what it does is it is a highly addictive drug. And what it does, you know, you have to inject it to use it, but what it does is it turns your skin, the reason it's called Croc is it turns your skin almost like alligator skin. And what's turning your skin is that drug, once it gets into your system, it starts to dissolve your muscles and it starts to sort of eat away at the bone structure under your skin. And he showed some pictures to the students, and I was standing in the back of the room, and the students were grossed out. And college students don't get grossed out very easily, but they were completely mortified by those pictures. And I had been thinking about doing a thriller story set in West Virginia, and I thought, my goodness, wouldn't that be something if that kind of a drug got unleashed on a community? Mm-hmm. and a drug of which there is no cure. And so I talked to I don't remember his last name. His first name was Tim, the officer that did the presentation. But I questioned him a little bit about it, and I said, you know, what makes it, after his presentation, and I said, what makes this so deadly? And he said, well, there's no cure for it. It's highly addictive. Unlike some other drugs, like you know, that there are remedies like methadone that you can take to get you off of that.
Right.
There's no cure for this. Once you get hooked on Croc, it's over, and the destructive power is instant. I mean, he said, you know, the average, once somebody gets started on that pretty heavily, he said, within about 3 months, they've done so much damage to themselves that they're beyond, you know, death is basically going to be imminent. And I thought, my goodness, what would happen if you turned that loose on a community? What would happen to the citizens? How would law enforcement handle that? And what makes desamorphine so interesting, guys, is that it's very cheap to produce. It's a drug that was originally formed in Eastern Russia, and it's very cheap to make. And what drug dealers have found out, both, you know, over in Europe and Eastern Russia, is that you get people addicted to this stuff, and people will pay any price to get their next fix. And so it's a boon for the dealers and the manufacturers of this, because it's cheap for them to make. They can sell it very high, and they know once you get hooked on it, you know, you can't get off of it. And so what happens in Fragile Brilliance is Michael Warner, we learned that Michael Warner, that student who was attacked outside of that sports bar in the first chapter, is involved with a group of people that are pushing and using and peddling that stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the, you know, what brings that drug to town is,
right,
this group,
right,
this drug syndicate has moved into the area to get things going with spreading that drug.
Right. Now, I remember at one point, one of the big honcho pushers told the sellers that don't give away any samples, don't take discounts, you know, we don't need it. You know, we don't need to take a discount on this stuff.
Right. Well, and you would, as a business model, you would have to be constantly finding new
people,
because
they're going to kill themselves.
You know, because it's, you know, your people that you're selling to are going to leave.
Right.
You know, they're going to die,
right,
eventually.
Yeah.
So you have to
three, 4 months,
constantly, you know, be looking for new users. It's
right.
That element of the book is really, you know, grounded in reality and is terrifying. It's an epidemic in
right.
many ways. And what motivates these characters? You have given us this this motley crew of the drug peddling folks, and you know, they all were probably pretty nice people till they got involved in this drug.
Yeah.
You know. And and then you have, of course, we've got the good guys that are really trying to figure out how
right.
what is going on. It takes them a little while to figure that out.
Right.
What is going
right.
on and how to stop it.
Right. departing from your book for a moment and possibly even longer, in one of your opening comments, you made a comment about John Steinbeck and that you like mm-hmm. to read John Steinbeck. And my question to you is, and this is probably going to be a 19-part question, but actually I'm going to try to do it all in one question. You still there?
Yes.
Okay. I was wondering because I started to hear the snoring.
No.
Okay, the question I have for you is, reading Steinbeck now and reading Steinbeck actually even when we were kids, the English used in the 1940s and 50s when Steinbeck was writing and the English we use now in novels and in writing, what do you find is the difference? Because I see a big one.
I think, Jim, probably the biggest difference I see is that Steinbeck's writing was a lot more compound and complex sentences. He would spend three or four sentences of a paragraph describing the texture of the sun as it's placed in
right.
the sky. He would spend, a paragraph describing what the grapes looked like in the Salinas Valley,
mm-hmm.
In the Grapes of Wrath, for example. He would spend, a paragraph describing just how thick the dust was,
mm-hmm.
During the Dust Bowl states during the Grapes of Wrath. And I think now, we write so much more shorter, much more clipped, much
right.
more simple sentences, and we see that. I think that part of that comes from the fact that, we're a Facebook, Instagram,
right.
Twitter, email kind of society
right.
now, and we want information in as few of sentences and words as possible. And I've often wondered what Steinbeck would think if he were alive today, watching how we write and how we communicate and
right.
how we choose to do that. But I think that's probably the biggest difference is, you could give someone a page of Steinbeck's work today, a high school student, let's say, or even a college student, and give them that, and then give them a page of the same type of description, maybe in four or five sentences, and they're going to tell you that the four to five sentence description is better, and that's the one that they're going to prefer. So I think that's probably, the biggest difference is that I think our society wants short, wants
uh-huh.
clear, wants concise, but wants
right.
it in as
right.
few words and as few details as
right.
possible.
We have a call coming in for you, so let me grab that. Oh, I don't know, did we lose him? If we lost you, caller, please call back.
I kind of think that's a tragedy, Elliot, because as a reader, I want to go to that place the writer's taking me, and I am happy to read those descriptions and let my mind create the visual piece using the words. If I want the short description, then, I'll go to YouTube and watch the video,
mm-hmm.
it
always amazes
me
because writers like Hemingway, Steinbeck, and a lot of others back in that particular time period, their descriptions were so genuinely very cool,
mm-hmm.
but their stories were so very easy to follow. Let me catch this caller for you. Hi, you've got the writer's block. Who am I speaking to?
My name is Karina Nikolai.
Hello there. Would you like to speak with our guest?
Yes.
Okay, hold on. Okay, Elliot, you're on with Nikolai, I believe is her name?
Yes.
Elliot, you with us? Don't tell me I lost him. Oh,
no.
Jesus. No, I should have him. I should have him. Elliot, you there? Ah, crap. I know. I can never do this. Anyway, if you will give me your question.
Hello?
Oh, Elliot, are you there with me?
Yes, I am. I'm back. I'm sorry. I lost you guys there.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Okay.
Well, okay. Now you're on with the young lady named Nikolai, if you would like to ask your question. Did we lose? Okay, go ahead.
My husband is in the Army, and I wanted to find out if he's going to be deployed.
If he's going to be deployed?
Yes, if he's going to be deployed. If he's going anywhere.
I don't know. I think you may have
a wrong number.
No, that's not what we do here, ma'am.
This is the...
I'm sorry.
This is the Writer's Block radio show on LA Talk Radio.
sorry.
That's okay.
No worries. No worries, but thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. And there you go, my friend. That's what we get here at the Writer's Block.
Well, maybe Elliot would have known the answer to that
question. Maybe you would have.
I wish I had a crystal ball or a rabbit's foot or something that could tell her that one way or the other. But that's way outside of my area.
There's a premise for a short story. You're calling into a radio show and
somebody calls in with that. Going to be deployed. Hey, you know, we get them all here.
They always say truth is stranger than fiction. So.
I totally get that one. Anyway, as we were saying, that the storylines were so incredibly simple and easy to follow. You never really got lost in a Steinbeck or a Hemingway book, even though some of them were very thick. Mm-hmm. You know, and some of the books that we read today, I have to go back and reread sections 5, 6, 7 times.
Well, and I think Jim brings up a great point. We know we've got a few books that we'll be reading further down the summer that are very lengthy.
800 pages.
And I sometimes think that there maybe could have been more editing, that sometimes when a book is lengthy, it's not necessarily because there was too much description,
right?
You know, but that perhaps there could have been some editing. Maybe that story doesn't need to have 800 pages, and it could be.
Right.
I won't know till I read these books.
Which brings up a good question. Okay, Elliot, here's a good question for you, because you're a writer and a good one. Do you feel that some authors, and I'm not going to throw you into that bunch, but I'm going to just ask about authors in general. Do you feel that some authors tend to overwrite?
Oh, I think so. I think that I totally agree with what you all are saying, what Bobby said about 800 page books. I mean, I think that, you know, we were talking earlier, and Jim brought up the question about, you know, how has writing changed today from when, you know, Steinbeck and Hemingway and they were writing. We talked a little bit about that, but I think at the same time you can go all the way to the other extreme and write too much and have too much. And I think, for example, you know, no one wants to read. Well, I shouldn't say no one. Most readers don't want to read a thriller or a mystery that's 800 pages long. I mean, there's something to be said for having red herrings and having twists and turns in mystery and thriller writing, which you want to have. But there's also having too many to the point where the reader is overwhelmed and
exhausted.
They can't really remember how twist number three tied back into twist number one. And that kind of thing. And I think that, you know, Bobby, you brought up a great point when you said, you know, I sometimes want to let my mind kind of take me there and put me there and those kinds of things. And I think when I read some books and I teach, I do a lot of workshops, in other states about writing and do critique groups. And I teach creative writing at Mount West and work with student work. I think that when we talk about overwriting, to me, that's the biggest thing that I see is everybody feels like writers feel like they have to put, and not everybody, but some feel like that they have to describe everything. When a character enters the room, they have to describe, what their eye color's like every time, and what the shape of their nose is, and what their fingers look like, and all of that. And if you do that for 4 or 5 characters, you know, that's 10 pages extra worth of text that you've got that maybe the reader doesn't need to know. Let them kind of imagine what that's gonna look like.
Exactly.
I think that's what happens a lot when we see overwriting is writers want to spell everything out for the reader and not kind of let their imagination take over.
Right. I get that. I totally do get that. So good answer, incidentally. Let's break away from your book now, and we're going to go into some of your process. And first of all, the name of this show is The Writer's Block. In fact, you'll see it on your coffee mug when you're drinking your whiskey in it and you're looking at it. Have you ever had writer's block, or do you get writer's block?
You know, sometimes I do. I don't know if it's necessarily writer's block in terms of, what we typically think is writer's block, and you're sitting down at the computer screen and that cursor is blinking at you over and over again and you don't know what to do, or you're sitting down with that notepad and that pencil or pen in your hand and you don't know what to say. I don't have that as much as I have sometimes situations where I feel like I've written myself into a corner or and that happened a couple times with Fragile Brilliance. I would put Ronan in a situation, or I'd put Ty in a situation, or I'd have Ronan and Ty in the same scene going over something, and I would think, okay, now I've got these two characters here, I've got Ronan here, I've got Ty here, how do I get them out of this chapter, or how do I get them out of this conversation, or how do I get them out of this scene so that we can continue moving the story forward.
Right.
So for me, that's the biggest writer's block I have, as I sometimes write myself into these corners with characters and situations, and I have to think, well, you know, what am I going to do next? And I've just found that for me, what helps me is kind of stepping away from it for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go take a walk. I'll go read a book. I will go, I'll go do some laundry. I'll, you know, play with my pets. I mean, I'll do anything to kind of just get my mind off of that. And I found that, you know, if I do that for a while and then come back sometimes later that day, sometimes the next day, and look at that same problem I had again, having taken my mind away from it for a while, I sort of come back to it with fresh eyes and a fresh perspective. And I realize, oh, now I see a way that I can, you know, get Ronan out of this scene, or Ty out of that problem, or get these two characters wrapped up so we can go on, or, you know, into the next chapter. So for me, that's kind of how my writer's block is. It's more kind of writing myself into situations that I can't get out of, and I have to, or get my characters out of, and I have to feel like, okay, you know, how do I get them out of here so that we can keep moving the story along?
Gotcha. It's a good answer too.
Mm-hmm. Do you work on multiple projects at the same time, or do you, you know, pretty much just focus on the project at hand?
I usually focus on one project at a time. I've just never been very good at working on two projects at a time. Now, sometimes I'll be working on a book and finishing up the first draft. And I may have an idea sort of percolating in the back of my mind, and I might start thinking just in very broad terms about, you know, some of those characters or what I want that storyline to be. But, you know, I'm pretty much focused on the project at hand. And I feel like for me, the most important part of any project or any book is to get that first draft done.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if I can get that first draft done, and I know that first draft's going to be terrible, and I know that first draft, we were talking about 800 pages earlier, I know that first draft might have 800 pages, and of that 800 pages, probably 550 are going to get tossed out during the revision process. But for me, getting that first draft done is kind of the primary goal when I start writing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that working on multiple projects at a time would take me away from the focus of getting that first draft done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So do you envision, I know there's another book that's going to come out very soon, I think, right? A follow-up, Code for Murder, is that coming out pretty?
Yes. Code for Murder is coming out in September from Black Rose Press, and I'm real excited about that. I'm doing a sort of a different series. I'm kind of toggling back and forth. I've never written a series before, so I'm sort of dabbling into that to kind of challenge myself a little bit as a writer. Code for Murder is going to focus, it's going to be set in Cleveland, and it's going to focus on a Cleveland homicide detective named Stacey Tabbitt. And her big mystery to solve in her first case is the body of a Cleveland Browns football player is found in a park near the shores of Lake Erie. And so she's got to find out, you know, about who the football player is, but how did he get there, and who would want him killed, and why. And she uncovers that there's a lot of secrets about him that she didn't know. He had many lives that he led off the football field. She's got the team trying to kind of protect him and protect their image. She's got a deal with the NFL, and they're trying to protect their shield and their brand. So that'll be out in September, and that was a series of books on her. That was a lot of fun to do because I had never really had a female protagonist. I've never really written a female protagonist before. I've had female characters in my other books, mm-hmm. but you know, this book is solely Stacey Tabbitt's story, and so it was mm-hmm. a lot of fun to write from the female perspective. But I just finished up the sequel to Fragile Brilliance, which is called A Knife's Edge. I got the first draft done about a week or so ago. So I'm real excited about it. A lot more adventures coming up for Ronan and Ty. A lot more trouble, a lot more violence, a lot more problems. It takes place 6 months after the end of Throughout the Brilliance. So six months pass.
The Ronin's
so Ronin's had a chance Ronin's, to heal.
Yeah, Ronin's been able to recuperate a little bit, huh?
Yeah, Ronin does have to. That's right. Ronin has to recuperate. I have to recuperate.
I know. But, if you were gonna set it like one week later.
Yeah. Kind of what happens in Fragile Brilliance carries over. So The effects of what all those characters suffered in Fragile Brilliance still plays a significant part in what goes on and how they have grown and developed in A Knife's Edge. So some of what happened in Fragile Brilliance doesn't totally go away in A Knife's Edge. So I'm real excited about that book.
Excellent. Hey, well, look, we're going to have to cut it a little bit short tonight. I'm sorry to have to do that to you, but look, when your other book comes out, send Jerry an email over at guestwb@yahoo.com, and she'll get you booked on for next year, and we'll get you back on the air. And in the interim, anytime you want to call in and talk to us, man, feel free.
We'll know how to answer the phone eventually.
Eventually, yeah. It's Skype, so it's just, you know.
Elliot, why don't you tell our listeners before you go quickly how they can find you?
Oh, sure. I have a website. It's ElliotParker.com, ElliotParker.com. I'm on Facebook at Elliot Parker. I'm on Twitter at E4419. You can get my books, Fragile Brilliance, Breakdown of Clear River, Code for Murder when it comes out in September, Amazon or Books a Million, Barnes & Noble, anywhere you like to buy books. Of course, I always encourage people to use their local independent bookstore if they have one in their community, because what those local bookstores mean to the community is so important. But wherever you like to get books, the books are available. And if you do read them, I would love to hear your feedback, positive and negative, about them.
Excellent.
So, that's how you can find me.
Okay, make this note. The second Thursday in September, or the first Thursday in September, I don't know what the date is. Whoever has a calendar can figure it out. We're going to have a two-hour show, and it's going to be on writing and agents publishing. And feel free, if you would like, please call in and chat with us.
The first Thursday in September looks like the 7th.
There you go, September 7th.
Okay, great. I will put that on my calendar, and I would love to call in and chat with you.
Oh, we would love to have you. We would love to have you, and thank you again for your time. Your mug will be there tomorrow, and it does hold coffee, too, by the way. So.
Fantastic. I appreciate the mug. I'm looking forward to it, and I promise there will be coffee and other things carried in there.
Oh, you're the man. Thanks so much. Okay, take care, my friend.
Okay, Jim and Bobby, thank you so much.
You betcha.
Thank you, Elliot.
You betcha. Thanks, Elliot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I believe we have Richard Paulinelli calling in.
All righty.
You do.
Oh, and we even got the phone answered. Hey,
oh, my
Richard.
God.
There you go. Hey, I do have one quick question, though. I got to know, am I going to be deployed?
I'm going to check my crystal ball and get right back to you.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm that poor lady. I think I don't know what she was looking at.
I'm actually saying a prayer for her. That has to be
really a wrong number.
If she's worried about that, then she probably should be. Hey, Rich, what do you say?
Yeah, there's probably quite a few people, and we have a lot of military in our family who are probably thinking the same thing.
Yep.
It's wondering the way things are going.
Yep.
But actually... I think this is your guys' second year anniversary, isn't it?
It is.
It is.
Thank you.
And congratulations on that. And I think it might be, if I'm counting right, it might be even your 100th show.
Oh, wow.
Oh, maybe.
It could be. It could very well be. Because there's a couple times it could. That would make sense.
Yeah.
It very well. Wow.
Wow.
I'll have to go back and
thank you for allowing me to be a part of it. I've been on, three times as a guest and twice as a host. So I've been in on a little bit of it, and it's been fun.
Yeah, you've been darkening our doorway quite often.
Hey, you know, you open the door, I'm like Dracula. You
I know,
me
it's
in,
just
I'm
invite
in,
you in, you're in,
Well, and I haven't had a chance to say anything to you since we were together at the Cowboy Festival, and I was so happy you were able to join us and that you were there on the Saturday date of that weekend.
Yeah, it was fun. I just wish the temperature had been a little lower.
It's the West.
It would have been nicer. No, it was actually a lot of fun. Met a lot of good people and got to talk with the gentleman who stitched a Lone Ranger costume. It looks like it came right off the plate.
Cowboy
Cultural Club. Yeah. Culture Club. Yep. Yeah.
It was very cool.
Very fun. So,
well, congratulations on 2 years, and may there be many, many more years to come.
Well, thanks. Now, what do you got for us? You said you had something really special.
I have, well, you know, I was on the show with you 2 weeks ago, and nothing was going on, and in the last 2 weeks since, everything has just, you know, happened, so I thought I'd call in and let you know. I've kind of reacquired the publishing rights to the Del Rio series. I've gone from being a hybrid author to a pure independently published author.
Okay.
In the space of less than 7 days, I think.
Okay.
So what we're going to be doing is we're going to, toward the end of the year, we're going to re-release the entire series with brand new covers. And I think I sent you copies of those.
No, I don't think you did.
I don't know if you got the email, but they're... there's going to be brand new covers for them. We're going to release, instead of a four-book series, it's only going to be three. So we're going to condense the last two books into one.
Okay.
And release the brand new book of the series about the same time we re-release the first two. And what's nice about it is, with the first one, Reservations, we're going to release it as an e-book only, but it's going to be free. So if you haven't read Reservations yet...
And that's a great book.
Hang on a little bit. You can get a free copy of it. And then Betrayals will be out probably about a day later. It'll be... I think we're going to release it as a 99-cent e-book. And then Endgames will come out, and it'll be full price.
Excellent.
So it's a chance for people to get introduced to the series who haven't seen it yet.
Uh-huh.
And we're also going to take all three books and combine them into one print version. So all three books will be in one volume. And we're working on that. I'll arrange for maybe November.
So it'll be a compilation, is what you're saying.
Congratulations!
Yeah. Excellent.
So it's kind of a different feeling now to just, you know, not have the traditional publishing anymore, but it's a good challenge to take up. So kind of looking forward to that.
Excellent.
And then I've got a couple of signings coming up in the Simi Valley area. People are going to be in the area on May 30th from 2 to 4 in the afternoon at the Starbucks at Wood Ranch Parkway and Country Club Drive. And it's real easy to find. You just follow the signs to the Reagan Library, because that Starbucks is maybe a half a mile away.
Right. Oh, I know where that is. I got it now. Okay.
So I'll be there with some of my books, and then I'm kind of horning in on one of Jim's signings on June 17th.
Yes, I heard that.
Yeah, he invited me as a discussion guest, but I'm going to slip a couple of copies of Escaping Infinity in my back pocket and pull them out while he's not looking. So.
Yeah, why not?
We'll get in there. Richard.
But the other thing, too, is I just got back from Torrance. There's a new bookstore. It's an independent bookstore called Pipe and Thimble. It's actually in Lomita, which is a little town right next to Torrance. They only stock independently published books. So it would be, you know, if you're in the area, you go by there, you're not only supporting a small business in the local area, but you're supporting a bunch of independent authors. So if you get a chance, give them a check. It's a Pipe and Thimble Bookstore.
Well, we need to put one of those in Simi Valley.
And we need to put that on our Facebook page. It's
Pipe and Thimble.
Pipe and Thimble.
Thimble.
Okay.
Right.
Yep.
That's very cool. We might need to have somebody from there call in and tell us a little bit about what it is to run an independent bookseller's bookstore.
Yeah, I think that'd be a very interesting show, and it's a nice little shop. I was just there, I'd say about 1 o'clock this afternoon after I fought my way down the 405, which is always an adventure. But it's a nice little store, nice little setup. They've got a pretty good selection of books for something that's just recently opened. So it's definitely worth looking into. And then I think I'm going to be on with you on that show in September you just talked about.
You are. You are. You're going to be on the 7th. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Trying to get Victoria Strauss to come on, too. I don't know if she's reached out to the bookie or not. But,
well, we have Catherine,
she
too.
She would be a nice guest to have as well, because she runs a website that talks about agents and publishers that new authors probably should avoid doing business with.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, as with any profession or any business, you've got some people who really aren't on the up and up. So she runs a site called Writers Beware, and I'm hoping she'll be able to join us, because she's got some great insight on you know, agents and publishing that it would make it a great addition.
Right. It'll be that show is I think already Kathleen Rogers is scheduled to come on, and you and I think Margaret Brownlee has also agreed to come on that show. So we're going to have a few people.
Yep. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
and Bobby Jean.
I think it's going to be a very good discussion. I think a lot of useful information is going to come out for anybody who's interested in writing at all.
Well, you know, I'm amazing you should mention that, because I was speaking with Elliot Parker last night, who was our guest this evening. And he said he loves our show. He said, I just love the banter you guys have with your guests, because you make it a lot of fun. But he says, I get so much information out of this show. So we're doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't stay on the air for 2 years and get how many hundreds of thousands of listeners you've got right now if you're not doing something right.
So, that's true.
Yeah, keep doing what you're doing.
That's true.
One last thing for people who have begged and pleaded with me. My website used to be myfirstandlastname.com, and unfortunately with my last name, you know, you get some interesting variations on the spelling, which doesn't take them to my website. So
we've
made a slight change in the domain name.
Okay.
And if you type in, all you got to do is type in scifiscribe.com, and it'll take you to my website.
Sci-Fi Scribe.
Yep.
Okay.
S-C-I-F-I Scribe.
Okay.
.com.
Oh, cool.
Okay, cool.
And there you go. Much easier
Excellent.
To remember, much easier to deal with.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
Very good.
Well, Rich, we're out of time.
Well, I'm going to let you guys go, and we will talk to you later.
Let's see you and I get together in the next couple of weeks and talk.
And thank you for acknowledging our anniversary. That was really...
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that means a lot. That
it
means
does.
A lot to us. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
And we'll be talking soon.
Okay.
Talk
to you guys later.
Bye-bye, Rich.
And next week you have Peggy Wheeler on.
We have Peggy Wheeler next week. I just finished your book. I bought it last evening, and I cracked it open, and I finished it today at 2 o'clock.
I can't wait.
Peggy Wheeler. She's the author of a wonderful, wonderful supernatural thriller called The Raven's Daughter. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't read it or haven't heard about it, please go to Amazon. It's available in both ebook and printed book, and it's just phenomenal. It's really, really good. And it's just one of those can't put it down. So, well, we're at the end of our hour.
2 years.
I know.
Your dream, and it's been going for two years.
It just keeps going, and it keeps getting better. And I just, I'm loving this show.
Yeah, it's
I
really,
love this show.
It's really fun. It's a
so,
highlight for me.
Thank you for joining
me.
Oh,
I'm so glad that you invited
me
to be part of it.
Oh, I certainly would. I certainly would. Jim, it's been good having you in the studio with us. It's not like we're dead or we're going anywhere.
No.
We're just thanking you.
No, but it's good to acknowledge it.
It is, and you know, without the bookie.
Oh, my gosh. We wouldn't be.
We wouldn't be anywhere near
no
where
way
we are right now.
We would still be here.
So, Jerry, if you're listening, and I don't know if you are or not, but if you are, thank you so much from the bottom of my putrid little Italian heart. And I guess that's it for us tonight.
Next week
is, of course, Peggy Wheeler. Oh, I can hardly wait.
With Russ
she's
in the
studio. Russ will be here, and she's going to be in studio with us. And it should be a wonderful hour.
You'll have a great time. And then I will see you back Norwood.
Yes, you will. On
June 1st.
June 1st, that's right. Okay, well, have yourself a good week. Have yourself a fun time. This is another Thursday, and we are out of here.